Jew and Gentile podcast. I am your host, Chris Katulka, and with me is none other than the Jewish sage himself. You might even think he's a chef if you're watching us right now on YouTube. The one and only Mr. Steve Herzig. How are you, sir?
I'm great, Chris. I have this hat on. It's part of a kittel.
A what?
A kittel.
A kittle?
A kittle.
All right. Well, I think
not
we're
gonna... a kitty. A kittel.
You're not a chef. We're not cooking anything today.
I'm not the Muppet Chef. Nope. It's an advertisement. I'm doing an advertisement.
You are a living advertisement. Hold on a minute. Here we go, everybody. Well, welcome in. That's right. Steve is a living advertisement. I think when Steve resurrects and walks into the presence of the Lord, his new job will be marketer of the kingdom, because he is a fantastic living, walking, breathing testimony of marketing. Steve, tell us why you've got a kittle.
Why do I look like an idiot? What is
going on
here?
Well,
actually, Chris, in our home church where I attend, a 104-year-old lady handed me a bag, and inside she told me, she said, I have a friend who has passed, but before she passed, she wanted this to go to a ministry, and it is a kittel. And I knew what a kittel is. You know what a kittel is.
People are amazing to me. Think about this. There's a woman who has a kittel.
Yeah,
was she Jewish?
I'm not sure. I never met her, but she was involved in Jewish ministry.
Okay, so she's got a kittle. She says, before I pass away, I want you to know this has got to go somewhere. I want it to go into Jewish ministry. Okay, amazing. So then this woman, 104 years old, takes it upon herself to give it to you, a Jewish believer in Jewish ministry.
That's right. And just 2 weeks ago.
This is amazing.
This just happened. And I said to myself, just shows you, I said, what am I going to do with this? I'm not going to use it.
Now, is a kittle something that's used in Israel when they go over there and you go to a 5-star Michelin restaurant
and you flip hamburgers?
That's right. It's the kosher chef.
Keep the hair out of the food. No, actually, this comes also with a white robe. Mm-hmm. And it's... is designed, especially long time ago, 100 years ago, especially in Europe, the leader of the Passover, whoever that male leader was, would wear a kittel. It's white, it's pure, it's high priestly, because mm-hmm. they would lead the Seder service. And Chris, you and I are doing a Seder live mm-hmm. for our Jew and Gentile podcast at 7:30 Eastern time. Me without the kittel. I'm just doing this to promote our Passover that we're having, and then I'm taking it off. But I really appreciated it. And the timing, I thought, I told you right before we came on, hey, wait, I'm going to put this, the part of the kittel, it's a whole garment, and put it on to remind our people, all seven of them.
All seven.
But there is a shout out to my daughter, who is already organizing with at least one family with like 3 or 4 kids and her 2 kids and at maybe another family. They're going to actually eat lamb.
That's amazing. When is Jaina going to minister at Friends of Israel? Because she's already done. She's doing Mahjong.
Yep, she's doing Mahjong. She promoted it here on this podcast.
She promoted Mahjong, and she's promoting Passover Seder. She's got them going on at her house, and hopefully we'll have a chance to lead the Passover Seder for her. That's right. And normally when we do an FOI Equip class, again, all this is sponsored by FOI Equip. You know, it's done on a computer and everybody tunes in and everyone's at their homes, as this is a Bible study online when you learn the Bible from a Jewish perspective through FOI Equip. But this time, FOI Equip will be hosted from the Jew and Gentile podcast. We're going to have to tell people we're going to have to warn people that we're going to be here so late in the evening.
That's right. We have to tell people about it, but... Chris, I just thought that Equip sponsors us. We wouldn't have the Jew and the Gentile podcast if it weren't for Equip.
That's right.
And so we had an Equip course on Passover. I said, let's use the Jew and the Gentile podcast to do the Equip course.
Well, I'm already thinking as I'm here and I'm thinking, we've got camera number 5. Let me see here. Camera 5. So what we can do is zoom in. This is camera 5 right here.
All right.
So camera 5 can zoom in on our Passover plate, which will be right here. And that's what we'll be eating from and leading
no
people through.
No lamb for us.
No lamb, that's right. And no. There's a reason for that,
we'll
too.
We'll talk about that.
That's right.
But my daughter is having lamb.
Okay, great. She's breaking the law.
And she's bringing children. There are children. Her oldest is 17. My grandson is 13. The other family, I think they go from 16 to 8 or 9, something like that. And so we got to be good, Chris. Oh. I mean, we got to keep the adults engaged, and we got what the kids are going to say, what is going on here? Which is, by the way, what Jewish kids do as they sit around the Seder table, depending on how observant they are, up to 4 hours.
That's right. And they're saying, what is going on here?
Where's the food?
What's
already
that called again? The mash, I never say it in Hebrew. When they say, why is this night different?
Oh, the Manashtana.
Manashtana.
Oh, yeah. I could recite them in Hebrew. I could give the little shtick with, oh, it'd be great.
Manashtana, which is, what in the world is going on here?
Why is this night different from all other nights?
That's
right. On all other nights, this is what we do. You can almost hear the Jewish rhythm. On all other nights, this is what we do. Why in the world are we doing this?
Exactly. And of course, they make the kids, I'm sure the adults are asking the same question, too. It's not just a kid's question. But
actually, Chris, if the truth be told.
Oh, he's taken off the kittle.
Yeah, I am taken off the kittle. If the truth be told, kids are usually more into it than the parents.
Yeah.
Because they've already done it 40, 50, however old they are. And I have been to some seders where Jewish seders, has nothing to do with being a believer. Just go to friend's house, which we've done, and we're a guest. And they whiz through it. I mean, they want to get through it so fast. They smell the food. But it's the kids who ask the questions. Mm-hmm. They want to know. And oftentimes you'll hear, which happens in Christendom as well, wait a minute, we better slow down because we want our children to understand.
That's right.
And that's why I'm happy Shana has elected to pass this on to another family. And they're actually going to go through it. And they want to hear it from us. And this is an invitation to anyone who would like to set up shop, as it were.
We're not doing the full Passover. We're going to be moving through
it. We're going quickly. Absolutely. But it is an opportunity for families to say, hey, wait a minute. If I'm a free 7:30 Eastern time, 6:30 Central, and 4:30 Western time, if I'm available, I could walk through and get an idea what the Jewish people do, and I could bring my family, mm-hmm. and we could watch this together.
And we actually have all of the materials for everybody on a website.
In the show notes.
No. Even better. Notes. No, we'll have the link to how people can register for the class in the show notes. But Friends of Israel has developed an amazing website called our Passover website that has all of our Passover materials for free for people to take.
For free,
foi.org/Passover. And there you can go, I believe, and you can get our booklet that goes through the whole process of the Passover.
Do we have a Haggadah?
The Haggadah's on there.
A Haggadah.
They can get the Friends of Israel Haggadah. They can get all the instructions. They can get recipes. They can get all the things they need to run a Passover for their family. So before you come to our event, that's coming up on, I believe, March 25th. Is that right, Steve? Does that sound right?
I don't have.
Here we go. March 21st. On March 21st, on March 21st, you can go to foiequip.org to register for the Jew and Gentile podcast Passover. But also, don't forget, while you're there, you can register for this week's class. Thursday night, tomorrow night, we're going to have Dr. Randall Price talking about archaeology.
Very important.
And he's a leading scholar. If there's anything you should be coming to, it's this class. Dr. Randall Price, he's an amazing guy.
Yeah, we're Mishigas. He's the real McCoy.
So, hey, Steve, we've got to actually do a quicker show today because we've got to hang out with the big macher in a little bit.
That's right.
Jim Showers.
He called us to order.
That's right. We're going to the principal's office. But why don't we go to the newish Jewish encyclopedia?
I've come to the newish Jewish encyclopedia very quickly because of our time. It has a whole section on the Passover. I don't know if our cameras can catch it, but
it looks good.
Sometimes I've been critical of the newish Jewish encyclopedia because of just interesting ways they present Jewish things. But the Passover, I'll just read the top part. It says, Passover marks the liberation of the Israelites who were slaves in ancient Egypt and recounts the story of their exodus to the promised land. Key things to remember, so jot them down.
Mm-hmm.
Moses, Moshe Rabbeinu.
That's Moshe Rabbeinu,
Moses the teacher. 10 plagues. Oh, very important. We'll be talking about that. Mm-hmm. And Jewish people remember those plagues.
It's important to remember the plagues.
Absolutely. Tsuris. 10 tsurises. Yes.
That's right. Yes. We've been saved from the plague to come.
100%. Matzah. Matzo and matzah. Mm-hmm. It's depending on who's saying it. And the parting of the Red Sea.
That's a big one.
So that's the, and then it gives you all the information here in the newish Jewish encyclopedia.
And the best part, you know, we always have to remind people listening, you know, why would you do a Passover Seder? I just think Christians only, you don't have to. It's not written in the New Testament that a Christian must do a Passover Seder. But I'm going to tell you, if you're a Gentile and you've never done a Passover Seder and you're a follower of the Lord Jesus, you've placed your faith in him, this will only enhance your understanding of not only Jesus's life as a Jewish man, but also of his death, burial, and resurrection, because he is called by the Apostle Paul our Passover lamb. He is called the Lamb of God, and he did celebrate Passover. So again, these are great reminders. No, you don't have to. But when I'm going to be leading a family Passover, we've got 33 people coming to our house this Saturday.
Where are you putting 33 people?
That's the big question. So it will be a tight Passover.
And what's the menu? What do we got? Matzo ball soup?
We're doing I think we're going to follow the tradition of Blanche, which is brisket.
Oh, brisket. Mm-hmm.
So we're not using Blanche's brisket recipe, but
you
we are.
Should.
I believe we're doing brisket.
The key ingredient is cola. For the gravy.
Coca-Cola?
Coca-Cola.
Oh, very interesting.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You ought to get Blanche's recipe.
Okay, that's good. But brisket is on the table, and so it'll be good. But, you know, I have to remind myself to tell the people who are coming, because some of them have never done a Passover before. And, why are we doing this? Well, it's not just for fun. It's because Jesus was Jewish. That's why this podcast exists. The Jewishness of the Bible only, I believe, deepens your faith in the Lord Jesus. So,
well, you know, thinking, Chris, of Jewish and what we do and why we do it, it's always interesting. I forgot my train of thought. I had a senior moment here. Talk.
Yeah. Well, we were just saying it's interesting. And but then you said senior moment. So that's about all I got out of that. Well, anyway, Passover season is coming up. And, you know, this.
Oh, I knew what I was going to say.
Good. There we go.
You're talking about Jesus and Passover. Most of our 7 listeners have taken communion. I'm pretty confident that most of our 7 listeners on a regular basis, once a quarter, once a week, once a month, depending on their church. And part of it is Paul tells us in 1 Corinthians to examine ourselves, mm-hmm. to look at the heart before we remember what Jesus Christ did as he became the sacrificial lamb that took away the sins of the world. To examine ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
You do that. We invented spring cleaning, Chris. We'll talk about that.
Oh, yeah.
Jewish people. So if people want to get mad at us, and everybody's mad at us, anti-Semitism at an all-time high. So I'm going to give people a chance to raise it a little higher.
You just love doing that, huh?
You could not like us because we invented spring cleaning. Before Passover takes place, a spring feast, we look for the leaven all around the house and we get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
That is what the Apostle Paul was saying, not about a house, but about the temple of the Holy Spirit, us,
yeah,
cleaning our house before we partake.
Mm.
And that's just one illustration.
Preach it.
There you go.
Preach it.
There you go. And I couldn't even remember.
All right. Well, we are back in Menno's book. We've been talking with Menno a lot lately. We saw him yesterday. We saw him today. And he's just on fire, and he is doing some great ministry. In fact, he just told me as he was online with us yesterday that he's going to be speaking at Pastor Menno Kalischer of the Jerusalem House of Redemption. He's going to be speaking to a group of soldiers, Israeli soldiers who are believers, and trying to encourage them on how to walk with Christ as they're serving their country in the military, but also as they're more importantly serving the Lord, the importance of Israel and God's plan, but the importance of walking by faith with the Lord during these very difficult times. So I would love to sit in on that meeting. I would love to be there.
Menno really is practical. He's passionate. Chris, when he speaks, people say to me, oh, Steve, you know, you're You're too loud. You're speaking with your hands. You're so passionate. Look, I am boring compared to Menno. 100%. Menno is, if he is Steve Herzig on super
octane,
steroids.
Octane.
Yeah. High octane.
100%.
Because he's so passionate about what he's doing. And the time in which he's ministering couldn't be any more important.
Exactly. And so that's why we're using his book, Jesus in the Hebrew Scriptures, which you can go to our, now you can go to our show notes, and there, which are just below, if you see show more, if you're listening to the podcast, it should show you show more information. All the links are in there, and you can purchase the book, Jesus in the Hebrew Scriptures.
Hey, Chris, I think people ought to take their picture, maybe if they're listening, have somebody take their picture reading Menno's book and then text it to you at 444-424-1948.
That's right, 1948. And I know we're going to get to Jesus in the Hebrew Scriptures, but I just want to say we've gotten some great texts recently.
Oh, let's hear the text.
424-444-1948. Our good friend Nancy Peck. Hi, Nancy from California. She wrote, "Thanks, Steve." She put me in there, but it's you. But thanks, Steve and Chris, for telling us about Brooklyn Bridge.
Love it.
On the podcast. It's so, so good. My next favorite one is a picture of our good friend Brinkley. You know who Brinkley is?
No. Who is Brinkley?
Brinkley is our friend, the dog. Brinkley the dog.
Putting our cup to good use.
That's right. Brinkley likes to drink leftover coffee out of the Jew and Gentile mug on a mug.
The mug on a mug.
That's right. So, not Brinkley. Excuse me. Brinley. Brinley.
Oh, hey, Brinley. Right? You already messed it up. He's not going to drink anymore.
He's not going to text us anymore or take drinks from the cup. Okay, Brinley, thank you so much. And then, you know, somebody's wanted to know, Steve, about going back into the archives where we did the podcast on the 10, on the top 10 Jewish sports people. And so
sports people,
to Jewish people in sports. And he goes, I think Sandy Koufax better be one of them, you know?
Yep. Yep.
But you know, I was trying to find it. I just don't have time to go through 133 different podcasts. So we're going to read the top 10 here.
That's right. We are. And it's like going down memory lane. Sandy Koufax, probably the number one, especially people my age, because of the 1975 I think it was 1975 World Series against the Minnesota Twins. Anyway, Sandy Koufax took Yom Kippur off,
mm-hmm.
and he still won. He still pitched 3 of the 7 games, and they won the World Series.
Can I say this really quick? Because we're running out of time, but I just want to say this. The other day, a friend of mine whose wife is doing Bible college classes, he calls me and he says, "You know, can we chat about a question about rest Shabbat?" And we were because his wife is writing this paper. So I called and we were all talking together and they were talking about Shabbat. And I said, well, one of the things Shabbat or Sabbath does, resting, is it identifies the Jewish people. It's an identifying marker. Yes, it's rest, but it also set them apart from everybody else. Look at Sandy Koufax. Here's a guy at the prime of his life. This is the game of all games, everything. You know, the World Series. I'm going to take off for Yom Kippur. Why? Because it marks him, and yet he still wins. He won. The whole team won. It was amazing. But you'd think, oh, the star player taking off is going to kill us? Nope, it didn't. Yep. And it marked him. It 100%. Made him different.
And it was 1965, not 75. Mark Spitz. Mark Spitz won 7 gold medals. Great swimmer. Jewish. Sean Green, early 70s. Outfielder and first baseman for the Los Angeles Dodgers, playing baseball. Max Baer, before my time, a great boxer, one of the top heavyweight boxers during the 1930s. Ali Reisman, many of us remember the London Olympics, and she won a gold medal for her gymnastics team. Hank, the Hebrew Hammer Greenberg. Everybody older, a little older than me, who's Jewish, knows Hank Greenberg. They said his arms, he had arms as thick as calves.
Wow.
He was a great home run hitter for the Detroit Tigers. Maxie Rosenbloom, a boxer. That's way before my time. Red Auerbach, if you know basketball, Red Auerbach was the general manager and sometimes coach not sometimes, longtime coach of the Boston Celtics. Agnes Coletti, who extraordinary gymnast, Holocaust survivor,
wow.
Born in 1921. She was a great athlete. And that's my list.
Okay, so his name is the awesome gentleman who texted us. His name's Woody. Woody, I'm going to keep looking for that.
I know Woody.
Yep, I'm going to keep.
He's in Nevada.
Exactly. We're going to keep looking for that article or doing that
original
podcast.
List. I just went online.
But I wanted to make sure that Woody heard our top 10 list there while I keep digging around.
We do not want texting to go in vain.
Like 100%.
We will respond to your text.
We want to be honest to our texters. So again, text us 424-444-1948. Let us know what you think about the podcast. Let us know if you got any questions. Let us know what we should talk about. We'd love to take some advice. Hey, we could use some help.
We could always use some help. So, but Chris, let's go to Isaiah. I want to just tell you about Isaiah 7:14 and why it's significant. One of the greatest problems I had when I first heard that about Jesus and the possibility even to think to believe in him, I could not believe that a woman's error, a woman's promiscuity would be somebody that people would worship. That's the way. Mary had, she fooled around and had a baby, and they made up a story. That's actually what I thought. Because hear, O Israel, the Lord our God, the Lord is one. And you will love him with all your heart, soul, and mind. We believe in one God. We don't believe in multi-gods. We don't believe that a man walking around on the planet is God. That's where I was. Only to find, as I was challenged to think about Jesus as my Savior and Messiah, that, wait a minute, God can do anything. And I already believe that. And the challenge, I think I've told it on the podcast before, but it bears repeating, is this, that I believed that a 99-year-old man and an 89-year-old woman came together in marital harmony and conceived a child at a point in time when she was barren, when the woman was barren. Mm-hmm. And so Abraham, at 100 years old, and Sarah, at 90 years old, had a baby. A baby. Mm-hmm. I believe that. But yet, the text is so clear that this would be impossible. And I never really thought about it. Once you believe that, then anything God decides to do is possible. And so I was challenged when I first saw this. And let me read just the verse 14. It's in the midst of some interesting dynamic going on, war. Israel's at war right now. There were people on the border of Israel at this time. And it says, therefore, the Lord himself will give you a sign. Mm-hmm. This is a sign that's going to be given to Ahaz. Give you a sign. Behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son and call his name God with us, Emmanuel. Chris, this is hard for Jewish people. This is a text that is hard to wrestle with. It almost seems that this is shaking the very foundation, the very place where Judaism parts ways with everybody else. We don't believe something like this. It's an abomination to us. Mm-hmm. The idea of God being a man. And yet, here is 700 years before Christ is born, Christ, Mashiach, Messiah, is born, and Isaiah gives us this prophecy as a sign that a virgin's going to conceive. This is going to be the sign. And Chris, here's where a little knowledge of Hebrew, not Yiddish, but Hebrew, comes into play. I'm going to ask you, there's two Hebrew words, and those two Hebrew words are debated. Rabbinically, they're debated. They're debated amongst theologians in Christendom as well. And we have the word virgin. That's it, virgin. Hebrew isn't that way. Tell us what's going on.
Yeah, well, there's the one Hebrew word that's used in Isaiah 7:14 is Alma. And Alma just means a young woman. Now, it can mean virgin, and there are areas in the Hebrew Bible where the word Alma is used in relationship to a virgin, but it's mostly used to just describe a young woman. I think the other word is
Betula.
Betula, that's right. And again, that one, I think, is that one the one that's more driven toward the word virgin?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that's not the word used here. So you might begin to think, well, wait a minute. This seems to be upsetting the prophecy. Well, actually, the amazing thing about the translations of the Bible is that, yes, it's Alma is the one that's used, which can lean more toward young woman than virgin. And, of course, it can still mean virgin. But a beauty of it is that when you go to about 200 B.C., prior to Jesus' birth, an amazing thing happens in Judaism. The Torah, the Tanakh, the Hebrew Bible is translated, and it's translated into Greek. And now all of a sudden, we're getting an idea, because Greek is a much more technical language. So we're getting an idea when you can take technicality and overlay it with Hebrew, which is a more ancient language, it's Semitic, a little more flexible. That's the thing about Hebrew. It's flexible. So when you take something that's very concrete, like Greek, and you lay it over the Hebrew, now we're getting to see how the Jewish people translated very specifically how these words would be used. So here we go. We have this word Alma that could mean virgin, or it could mean a young woman. Well, so then how did the Hebrew writers, the Jewish writers, translate that word into Greek? Well, there's no doubt that the word used in Greek in the Septuagint, which is the Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible, it is the word for virgin, period, done. So now what we're able to see is, how did Jewish people understand Alma when they were reading that prophecy? Well, they were translating it as virgin, not young woman, and they were understanding it then. So we can begin to peel out and see, well, how were people thinking about that word then? The Septuagint gives us the definition to how Jewish people were thinking about that prophecy.
Well, you know, Chris, when I first went to Israel in the 80s, I knew about Alma and Betula. I heard it was instrumental in me coming to Christ. I had a Masoretic text that I was looking at, and it said at the top that it was a young woman. The young woman shall conceive, and I'm trying to figure out why would the argument in the King James Version be virgin. So I went around, and I got the argument seven times. Alma is used. It's always used in the Bible in reference to a young woman who's getting married. And when that happens, a young woman is a virgin. That's mm-hmm. the natural thinking of the Hebrew.
That's right.
And so I went and asked secular people. I just said, look, I'm Jewish. I don't have, I took Hebrew. I'm not that good in it. You're Hebrew speakers. If I say Alma, what are you going to tell me it means? And every one of them said virgin. Every one of them said virgin. I said, well, what about young woman? Oh, yeah, young woman. But in their mind, at least back—
These are Jewish people.
Yep.
Interesting.
In their mind, it was somebody who was going to get who hadn't been married yet.
That's right.
And the idea—
Because there was no sexual revolution back then.
If you were a young woman— You were a virgin.
That's right.
That's the understanding. And I think that's really important for us, because at the time that it's— your point is really good, because we're in 2024. We've gone through every kind of revolution. Things that are— hey, I didn't watch it, but I did on my feed. I don't know about you. The Oscars were on Sunday. And I remember that wrestler. I just saw him on a TV thing years ago. And he comes out.
Actually, that's a great point. He's talking about John Cena. John Cena, his award that he was giving out was best costume.
Best costume.
And he came out with no costume. Nothing.
He came
bupkis.
On with a little placard in front of him.
That's
that was
right.
It.
That was his
picture
leaf.
On my feed when I, you know, I was looking at the news and I type in, you know, news and boom.
The guy's practically, I mean, he's naked. He's coming out and he's just covering one area. But here's the thing that's interesting about that is, even in Judaism in the days of Jesus, you didn't walk around naked.
No.
It was very Gentile to
go.
We
did. Oscars 30 years ago. Nobody would do that.
No.
Context is important.
100%. But even for Jewish people would never. Now, Roman baths, Greek baths. Yeah, those men were walking around like that. But Jewish people that were followers of the Torah would never be caught dead in those areas.
Never.
That's what the pagans do, the Gentiles do. That's why, again, there is. You have to assume that the word Alma means that. In today's culture, you can't assume that.
Yeah, if you say young woman today, you think of just a person. You don't even think about that.
That's right. But that word would assume being a virgin. And then the layering the Greek on top of it, we know specifically that
they were
thinking.
Which is why those Jewish people translated in the Greek. That's just the way they translated. And in the context, what's the sign? Taking the sign and then going to Alma, well, wait, what is it a sign if any person has a baby? I mean, any woman has a baby? No, women have babies all the time. This baby is unique.
Mm-hmm.
This person who's having the baby, this Jewish woman having the baby, it's unique. It's a unique birth. And so the sign is this virgin birth. And it, as I said, you have to wrestle with it. Jewish people have to wrestle with the idea of the, which we've already talked about, the Son of God.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we talked about in Menno's book, in Psalm 2, the Son of God. Now we're talking about the virgin birth. It seems to attack your Judaism, but really it's not attacking your Judaism. It's reinforcing what biblical Judaism is all about, which brings about Christ.
And I like what you always say too, which is what you had already mentioned it, but you know, it's common in Jewish circles to go, the Messiah was never intended to come from a virgin, and how could you believe in that? And but then when you think about the fact that Sarah at such an old age, I mean, that is practically it's a miracle. That's God making a child come from a barren womb of a woman who's 90 years plus years old with a 100-year-old husband. It's unthinkable. And yet, like you said, Jewish people go, oh, this is a part of our faith. No questions. But it takes as much faith to believe in that as it does believing in the virgin birth of
exactly.
Jesus.
Exactly. But it's challenging. You know, God challenges us. But Chris, almost every topic we've covered in our podcast, we're in the middle of our third year podcasting. Almost every topic has really involved
second year
is really challenging our faith.
Mm-hmm.
It's all God challenges us. The word challenges us. There's things that we wrestle with, and this is one of the prophecies as Menno is taking us. Jesus in the Old Testament scriptures, this is a major challenge. And that's why he camps around these pages. There's a few pages on it. Well worth reading. We don't have enough time to go through it. But if you go on FOI.org, you could get on our website. And if you get on our website, you could go to our bookstore and you could get Menno's book, which is fantastic.
Amazing. And you can do even more study than what we're ever offering you right now.
We offer your bupkis.
That's right. So, but because we're in such a hurry to hang out with the Big Macher, we're going to leave there with the virgin birth. We'll probably pick up with some more of that next week. Also, just a reminder, too, that we aired a special last week of Menno teaching about Genesis chapter 1. Which is great. He did a fantastic job. This Friday, we're going to have another special because we had Julie Paris from Stand With Us. She came in last week, and we were able to do a quick program with her. And so we're just
and the Bergs from Pittsburgh.
Oh, and the Bergs from Pittsburgh. They're good friends. And so Julie, who is so well-spoken, a Jewish woman who supports Israel and the Jewish people.
Stand With Us.
And is with Stand With Us. She's going to talk about the organization she's with, and you're not going to want to miss it. So we'll be airing that this Friday. It'll be released. So, Steve. Why don't you take us to the news?
Okay, Chris. We just met with our couple in France, the Massenkoves, and they were alarmed at the spike in anti-Semitism in France and told us that about 30 years ago, when they first moved to France, there were 750,000 Jewish people in France. You and I just heard from them today, and they reported that there's less than 500,000. And the reason there's so much less, and it's dropping, it's going down, is because of the tremendous anti-Semitism, the increase in just how bad things are. They were describing it. One of their friends, 94 years old, is leaving. They've been good friends. She takes Hebrew from her, and this 94-year-old Jewish lady is, her two of her three kids are already in Israel, and she's going there. She can't take it anymore.
This is fascinating too, because France is really the bullseye of where the modern state of Israel, the kind of the real drive to develop a modern state of Israel in the late 1800s comes from. It was the Dreyfus Affair, a French Jewish man who was a captain in the military that our good friend, my spirit animal behind me, Theodore Herzl, was writing about. All of this was in France, and that's when Theodore Herzl, who was once somebody who believed Jews should just assimilate into their culture, all of a sudden goes to France and sees Frenchmen screaming out to this Jewish person, "Kill the Jews!" And they tried Dreyfus on treason, when actually he was innocent, and all because he was Jewish. So it really shook Theodore Herzl to the core, and he completely changed it to 180. And he changed his ways, and that's when he said, we need a Jewish state. We need a state for our own defense, our own self-determination. And so that all kind of routes back to France. But this is interesting, because this is a different kind of anti-Semitism. It's not like that was very European. It was French. But we're seeing a different group of people in France that are creating the anti-Semitism, and it's actually French Muslims.
Yeah, Gatestone published, and the headline is France Skyrocketing Threat. And let me just say that on January 30th, 2024, the French weekly Le Journal de Manche published the most comprehensive and detailed survey on what French Muslims think. Not surprisingly, the results are disturbing.
Steve, your French is phenomenal. Le Journal du Dimanche?
I don't know. What did I just say?
You nailed whatever you said. I mean, it's like you came right out from Paris. You're like a Parisian or something like that.
Even a blind squirrel gets a nut every now and then.
That's amazing. So,
okay, the first question in the survey was about Jews. 17% of French Muslims admit that they hate Jews. 39% say they have a bad or very bad opinion of Judaism. France is the only country in the 21st century Europe where Jews regularly have been murdered simply because they are Jews. Since the kidnapping, torture, and murder of Ilan Halami in January 2006, all Jews murdered in France have been killed by Muslims.
Wow.
So this whole article on Gatestone, which, by the way, we have a writer from Israel in Israel My Glory who writes a piece every issue.
He's from Gatestone.
Mm-hmm. And so what we're seeing is hundreds of percentage points increase on anti-Semitism. And in France, it's so alarming that Jews, I think it's not fair to say streaming out, but they are regularly leaving.
Mm-hmm. Well, next in the news, Steve, from Breitbart, is Jewish group slams Biden for ignoring anti-Semitism in the State of the Union. Now, let me say this. I don't know how long Biden was practicing, but I watched the whole State of the Union, and he got up and he did his job and he got down. And I'll tell you this right now, if for the people who were worried about what he would do, he stuck to his guns. He got it done. And there were very few gaffes as people were waiting. But I will tell you, and a lot of people, I talked with my neighbor. I live in New Jersey. So I talked with my neighbor and he said he did fantastic. And you know what I said to my neighbor? See, it's about what he left out. It's not about what he said. It's about what he didn't say. And sometimes that screams louder than what if you would say something. And so there were a lot of key issues of what's going on in the United States that Biden left out. And one of them being the rise of anti-Semitism. And so a Jewish group, according to Breitbart, slams Biden for ignoring anti-Semitism in the State of the Union. B'nai B'rith International, the oldest Jewish organization in the United States, criticized President Joe Biden on Thursday for failing to mention the rise in anti-Semitism during his annual State of the Union address to Congress. The Wrap reported in a statement Thursday, B'nai B'rith International said it's surprised and disappointed that President Joe Biden didn't address the growing threat of anti-Semitism across the country in his State of the Union speech. The group asked that Biden honor a Trump-era executive order to combat anti-Semitism and to make a renewed call for a domestic anti-Semitic czar as a counterpoint to the U.S. Special Envoy to monitor and combat anti-Semitism. B'nai B'rith added, "In the year ahead, we remain committed to calling on the president and other elected officials to speak out against anti-Semitism and advocate for policies that bolster the security and prosperity of Israel."
Anti-Semitism, Chris, it's worldwide. It's again, I've said it so many times. I never thought in my lifetime that I would be living at a time similar to the way it was in the early 30s, because that's what we're seeing. And really worse, because it's everywhere.
Yep.
It's not just limited to Germany and to Poland at that time. Western culture, as we've seen, is being invaded by anti-Semitism.
Anti-Semitism is on the rise. And in light of what you're talking about with 1938, you can just look at it through the lens of anti-Semitism. That's enough. But then at the same time, there was also a lot of political movements going on in the 1930s that were leading to what would become the Holocaust and leading to what would become World War II. And what we're seeing is not only the rise of anti-Semitism, but we're also seeing Russia invading Ukraine with a view of beyond Ukraine, going into Poland. And what we're seeing, the rise of China. We're seeing countries like the United States, as we're going to see here in a moment with our next article. You know, Israel needs to take care of Hamas once and for all. And now we're beginning to say, hey, going down into Rafah for Netanyahu to complete his mission would be crossing a red line for the United States. And so now you see the United States and Israel, as Israel's at war with Hamas and ultimately at war with Iran. So we're seeing these major political movements that are taking place with war that's all over, it seems like. And then on top of that, the rise of anti-Semitism. It does feel and sound a lot like the 1930s.
One of the major differences, Chris, I just saw this morning about legislation that is going before Congress and that is bipartisan, but it's being fought a little bit. It's on TikTok, taking the area of where China is in control of the information, including the election, and removing that. And then the whole idea of a whole generation of Americans are being raised with anti-Semitism as a underlying current.
100%. Well, Steve, we got one more article here. Netanyahu from the New York Post, ready to defy Biden's red line on impending Rafah invasion.
Chris. This is big. Netanyahu represents all of Israel. And when I say all of Israel, that I'm exaggerating, I think, by 18%. 82% of Israelis are in favor of the way the war is being handled by Israel.
It says this in an MSNBC interview Saturday, Biden said that he is against further fighting in Rafah and called an invasion of the area a, quote, red line, but then quickly backtracked to say that there was no red line. He said, quote, this is Biden saying, it is a red line, but I'm never going to leave Israel, Biden said. So this is interesting because I'm just hoping it's the same red line that Obama had Syria. Okay,
that's right. Two of them. Yeah, I think he had two of them.
You can move it. Okay,
that's right.
It's movable.
It kept moving. It reminds me of an old Andy Mayberry show where the bully was bullying Opie, and he said, "Hey, knock this off my shoulder," and Opie does. He challenged him. He said, "Okay," and he takes a step back and says, "Now cross this line," and then he does.
Oh, that's good.
And he runs away.
And he runs away. Exactly. You know, this is the interesting part about what's going on is that at the very end of the Obama administration, he really abandoned Israel in the UN. And, you know, we're coming up to what could potentially be the end of the Biden administration. That was the Obama. This is the and there's a lot of similarities in the policies and the way that they manage things. It'll be interesting to see what this does do. You know, will America abstain abstain in a UN resolution coming up. There's a lot of questions as to what this war is going to do with the relationship between Israel and America, because, you know, he can say, I stand behind Israel, and still abstain in a UN resolution. So
it's been done before.
It's been done before, so it'll be very interesting. So that's our news, but we got to keep moving because, Steve, we've got a Yiddish word of the day, a Yiddish word
our
of the day.
Our Yiddish word of the day is we've done Isaiah 7:14, a virgin shall conceive. That is really the nuts and bolts of Christianity. You have to believe in the Son of God who is born from a virgin. And so our Hebrew, our Yiddish word of the day is tachlis.
Tachlis.
Got to get that ha.
Tachlis.
Which means practical, nuts and bolts, the root of it. And that's what Isaiah 7:14 as a prophecy, 700 years before Jesus was born, the unique Son of God.
And that's funny because in the Yiddish word of the day for the definition, it can also mean end, entirely, the ultimate, and the purpose. So I think that really fits in well, like you said, the nuts and bolts. It's, you can't have the purpose of Jesus's coming if you don't have the virgin birth.
100%.
So that's really good. Tachlis is our Yiddish word of the day. All right, everybody, thank you so much for being a part of the Jew and Gentile podcast. Don't forget to go to foiequip.org to register not only for Dr. Randall Price on his class, Digging Up Truth. You can also go and register for our Jew and Gentile Passover presentation. So be sure to go to foiequip.org, and there you can register. And there's even an additional class on there, Steve's teaching on Romans 9 through 11. So be sure to visit us there at FOI Equip. Hey, guess what? We'll see you next week.
I'm not wearing that hat.